Our first case for argument, United States versus Vaughn and Lockhart. Mr. Michalik.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Mark Michalik, representing Maurice Lockhart. I also represented Mr. Lockhart in the District Court. Your Honor, Mr. Lockhart moved to dismiss the indictment on the basis that the indictment did not set forth each element of the offense with which Mr. Lockhart was charged. Mr. Lockhart was charged with a single count of a violation of 21 United States Code 846, conspiracy to distribute heroin. Civil Rule of Procedure 8 requires, on its face, notice pleading, whereas Criminal Rule of Procedure Rule 7, on its face, requires factual pleading. And recently, the Supreme Court held in Bell Atlantic Corporation versus Twombly, and then applying it generally to civil pleading in Ashcroft versus Iqbal, that despite the plain language of Rule 8, the plaintiff in a civil case still has to plead sufficient facts for the cause of action to be plausible.
No, I'm afraid that's a big loser. No, you don't understand. Iqbal and Twombly, they're about plausibility, not about fact pleading. If you read a complaint, judge reads a complaint, it just, you know, facts may be absolutely accurate and so on. It just doesn't seem to add up. Not that there's a fair state of claim, but it just looks like an implausible claim. And when that's true, the judge can dismiss. And the reason is that when the claim is implausible, the Supreme Court doesn't want to put the defendant to the burden of responding to discovery requests. Well, of course, the government cannot demand discovery from a criminal defendant. And there's nothing about this indictment which suggests that this is some kind of phony case, right? Perfectly standard indictment. Can be true or false, but there's nothing on it which makes you say, well, this is fishy. It don't look right.
I see your point, Your Honor.
So this is a total loser.
Well, the court in Ashcroft said the first step is...
It's a total loser. That's about civil cases with discovery burdens on defendants. It doesn't have anything to do with indictments.
Nevertheless, the first step in the Iqbal case was to parse out which of the statements in the complaint were legal conclusions and which ones were factual in nature. And I don't understand why, you know, those rules wouldn't apply equally in a criminal case.
I don't know what you mean, which are factual and which are legal.
Well, you know, in both Twombly and Iqbal, I'll stick with Twombly first. The complaint tracked the language of the antitrust statute, which had normally been sufficient. But the court, in reviewing the complaint, said, "Well, you know what? These really are legal conclusions. They're not facts."
Well, that's not the problem. The problem was that you didn't have in Twombly, it was an elaborate complaint, but it did not squarely allege an agreement between the defendants. I mean, so with all the facts that were alleged, where was the agreement, right? That was the problem. You don't have anything. There's nothing about this indictment that's confusing, fishy, implausible. It's a perfectly standard indictment. If you need more information to answer, you can ask for a bill of particulars.
And we did in this case.
Nowhere. I mean, there's no way that the Twombly and Iqbal are going to be applied to indictments.
I'd like to say a little bit about,
do you have another argument?
I wanted to say just a little bit more about the
about what?
The similarity between the Twombly case and Mr. Lockhart's indictment.
Forget that. Go on to your next argument. Do you have another argument?
No, that's really all we raised.
That's all you have?
We said that we should have gotten a bill of particulars as well, but you know, I recognize that.
You asked for a bill of particulars?
Yes, we asked for a bill of particulars.
And the government said no, or the judge said no?
That's correct.
And how are you prejudiced by that?
They said it was not necessary because we received discovery. And as far as I can tell, in the law in this circuit is that whenever you receive discovery, unless you can show that it's somehow incomplete or not all you're entitled to, you don't get a bill of particulars.
So no prejudice.
Well, in the briefing below, I pointed out that it's difficult to assess prejudice in pretrial briefing, you know, before you see what is presented at trial.
Well, in this case, you now know what the government's evidence was.
Yes.
Now, how are you prejudiced by not having obtained that evidence before the trial?
As far as bill of particulars or the indictment, Your Honor?
Either one.
I don't know that we were.
Pardon?
I don't know that we were.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you.
Ms. Holland?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Edith Holland. I represent Maurice D. Vaughn in this appeal from his criminal conviction in the Western District of Wisconsin. The issues we raised on appeal were essentially sufficiency of the evidence and sentencing errors. With respect to the sufficiency argument, the main testimony relative to the conspiracy came from an unindicted co-conspirator named Ford, who spent about 9 months in jail before he decided to cooperate with police investigators and his girlfriend, who had an interest in having him released from jail earlier by providing testimony consistent with his own. Aside from his testimony and her testimony, there are several other witnesses who testified relative to the manner in which they conducted transactions with the defendant Lockhart and the unindicted co-conspirator Ford. Out of those witnesses, though, there's no indication from their testimony how the conspiracy operated, that there was mutual support between the conspirators. There's no proof from that testimony of drug sales on credit.
I thought the way it worked was that Lockhart and Ford delivered Vaughn's drugs to customers.
That's the case as alleged by the government, yes.
Why isn't that a conspiracy?
I guess
that these three people working together to deliver drugs. One has the drugs, and these guys do the deliveries. One in the morning, one in the afternoon.
Yes, Your Honor. We contend, though, that...
You didn't like the testimony, or you didn't believe it?
We
was
didn't.
It unbelievable?
Well, I think Ford's testimony is unbelievable. I think Ford was in
the
jail.
The credibility of the witnesses, whoever is the problem for the jury.
I understand, Your Honor. I understand. But I guess I would argue if the remaining testimony just didn't add up to a conspiracy based upon the case law. That's my argument with a conspiracy. I'd like to focus more on the sentencing. I think that the trouble with the sentencing was that much of the drug quantity that was added into the relevant conduct computation for Vaughn was based upon statements given to police relative to past incidents, some of which were 3 years older. The main person who contributed to the drug computation that was used in sentencing was 1,568.65 grams of heroin. And 729 grams of that was associated with a person named Jesse Green, who didn't testify at trial and who gave statements to police relative to a nine-month period in the year 2007, from the beginning of 2007 till September 2007, indicating he had purchased up to 729 grams of heroin from Vaughn. During sentencing, the judge didn't really want to hear much information from the pre-sentencing report from the government. He indicated he had read it and understood it. But I would argue that the pre-sentencing report, along with the arguments made at the sentencing, didn't establish sufficient similarity, regularity, and temporal proximity of the related conduct to consider it as relevant conduct for sentencing purposes. Additionally, and I know that the rules of evidence do not apply at sentencing, but prior
so
to trial...
So you're saying that,
yes.
that his earlier drug dealings in 2007 or something,
yes.
they were not part of the same course of conduct as the charged?
Yes, we're trying to... Yes, that's my argument.
Because there was an interruption or what? Because it was different,
well,
a different kind of?
No, it was
He's a drug dealer, and, you know, maybe he had an interruption for several years, but so what? It's the same course of conduct, same drug, right?
It's the same drug. I disagree. I don't think it's the same course of conduct or the same...
Why not?
Well, because...
Any reason?
The reasoning behind that is that I just don't think that there was enough evidence presented to the court for the court to determine it was the same course of conduct.
What more would be needed?
Something indicating, you know, the conspiracy alleged was with he, Lockhart, and Ford, and certain unknown conspirators, or unnamed conspirators. But I think that the problem is that that conspiracy was alleged from May to August.
So we know it's an interruption.
Yes.
Now, what was he doing? Was it 2007? Or?
Yes, 2007 was the conduct with
2007.
Well, he was out of jail. He was on supervised release.
Well, I don't know. What was he doing in the way of a drug dealing?
Well, from what the record shows, somehow he was dealing drugs to Jesse.
Somehow he was dealing drugs. The same drug. Now, how is he... What more, if anything, do we know about what he was doing then?
I don't really know anything else about it. I just know from the information that I read in the
pre-sentence report. What did the pre-sentence report say?
It said that Green gave unprotected statements to police indicating that... I can read it exactly if you want me to, but that indicating that he had obtained heroin from Vaughn up to 729 grams, essentially.
That it?
Yeah, the pre-sentencing investigation, when it's speaking of the prior relevant conduct that's not not charged, the uncharged conduct, it doesn't really have detail as to how all those transactions occurred. Now,
that'd be important.
He sold drugs in 2007 to Green.
He sold the same drug to a few years later. Second time he was using Ford and Lockhart. We don't know if he had assistance the first time or whether he delivered it all himself. What difference does it make? He's a heroin dealer, right?
Well, Your Honor, I just think that...
This is his first time, the charged conduct. That's his first time. Well, okay, maybe he, you know, got into this. Maybe the prison sentence will discourage him. But on the other hand, if he was already a heroin dealer, that's more reason to think this is his career, and... He needs a longer sentence because he's likely to go back to his accustomed way of making money.
Well, the difference between... He does have a previous sentence. The difference between his prior actions and what happened in the years after he got out of his first prison sentence, because he did have a previous prison sentence, was that he obtained work. He was working regularly from 2004 until 2008, I think, when he... I might have misspoken on the year. I'm not sure. But he was laid off when GM... Actually, he was laid off from his job. It was associated with GM. So the difference was he was employable. What?
So he went back to an earlier career.
Well,
you have to have a fallback position, I suppose.
All right.
Okay. That it?
I have nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Mr. Anderson?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Robert Anderson. I have the privilege of representing the United States in this case. This really is a case about Mr. Vaughn evolving from a hand-to-hand drug dealer into a, he realized that the risk of doing hand-to-hands and evolved into the conspiracy to insulate himself. That's what the record really showed.
So when he sold to Green, it was direct, it was face-to-face. He didn't have his assistants then.
Correct. Mr. Green said...
Really, he was graduating into a...
Right, and actually...
More sophisticated, elaborate, yeah.
Right, and that, he was learning from his experience as a drug dealer, actually, because he was selling to Mr. Green hand-to-hand in 2007. The record also has in it references...
See what education does.
I'm sorry?
See what education does.
Yes. It was during 2007, the summer of 2007, that the police caught onto him and tried to do a control buy with an informant. But at least he was smart enough at that time to check for a wire. He found the wire, ripped it off, and threw the money out the window. Now, they did arrest him for robbery, but...
Not for destroying government property by throwing the wire out the window?
I think they tried for that, too. But the problem was the witness was scared by that point in time since she'd been discovered. And so he learned to evolve to develop this conspiracy. He'd insulate himself by he'd stay in the house... Give his supply of heroin out to Ford and Lockhart. They'd do the selling and bring him the money at the end. So, as to Mr. Michalak's argument, of course, I won't spend a considerable amount of time on that. But it's well settled, the Supreme Court and this circuit's authority that indictment was sufficient. There are clear reasons why there's a difference between civil complaints and criminal indictments.
I thought that was laid to rest.
You weren't listening. We're dealing with that's apples and oranges, really.
You weren't listening then.
Sorry?
You weren't listening or you wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on it. So the contentions that Mr. Vaughn raises about the sufficiency of the indictment, as the court has recognized, rely almost primarily or exclusively on the credibility of the witnesses, that going through a litany of challenges. But the record clearly shows that was almost entirely what the defense was at the trial, what exactly was argued to the jury, and the jury made their credibility determination. And as this court has said many times and observed today, this court does not reweigh credibility assessments of the jury or the evidence. The sentencing, it's obvious to point out almost all of Mr. Vaughn's arguments about the sentencing are based on things that he did not object to at the sentencing. So the judges on the bench ruling on the sentence, there is no reason, and there's no authority, and certainly no reason in common sense for the judge to go item through each paragraph of the PSR of something that is uncontested and can be adopted because the parties do not dispute it. So the relevant conduct was proper. The relevant conduct as it then played into the criminal history. His criminal history was properly determined. The role in the offense and the drug weights. Just to comment on the drug weights. Inherently, drug weight estimates. It is an estimate, as I noted in the brief. It's not a science. It's an estimate. But even to have a plain error, which is the standard applicable to these objections or these issues raised that they did not raise at sentencing, to have a plain error, you have to first have an error. These arguments about double counting, say for Mr. Andre Sims, even if you subtract out, just for the sake of argument, subtract out all of Mr. Sims's weight, which is 23 grams in the PSR, that's subtracting 23 grams from 1,568 grams. You're still above 1,500 grams. You're nowhere near being in a different range than. So there's clearly no error in the first place, much less a plain error. Unless the court has any questions about any of the other sentencing issues, just rely on my brief and note there's an obvious difference between the sentences of the two defendants because there's an obvious difference between the two defendants. Mr. Vaughn, with his extensive resume and experience in...
Resume is the first time I've heard that term used in this context.
He earned certainly all the credits that he received in the criminal history score, and Mr. Lockhart was a novice to this and had his personal
issues. You've got to start
someplace. I'm sorry?
You have to start someplace.
Yeah. So unless there are any other questions, I will rely on the arguments made.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Mitchell or Ms. Holland, do you have anything further?
I don't have anything to rebut.
Okay. Mr. Mitchell, you were appointed.
Yes.
So we thank you in particular but for your efforts on behalf of your client, but we also thank Ms. Holland and Mr. Anderson. So we'll move on to our next.